Before starting, I just want to say that one of the wonderful things of being here in Israel is that you get a chance to see people from all parts of your life. And I want to welcome two individuals to the class who were instrumental in starting my rabbinic career, the Wassermans, who are here, who hired me as a youth director from the East Coast to the West Coast. And it's just wonderful how things turn around. Can you hear me? You can't hear me. Okay. All right. Parshas Chayei Sarah is perhaps my favorite parsha in the Torah. And you might think it's a strange choice. It's the last parsha in the story of Avram and Sarah. But I believe that the messages that emerge from beneath the text are just extremely powerful and continually relevant. And what I like about it is that they're not obvious, that you have to search for them, you have to look for them, you have to see them, and when you look at the text, they become obvious. In order to understand the parsha, though, I think it's best if we turn back for a moment to an event in Parshas Vayera, which we have not really discussed, which we could discuss forever, but you'll see how it serves as an introduction to how I would view Parshas Chayei Sarah. And that is the Akedah, which is the last major event to take place in Vayera before we move to Parshas Chayei Sarah. Obviously, when we talk about the Akedah, we could talk about it for years. The question, of course, is why God needs to test Avraham. Why is such a test necessary? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's capable of doing. There are numerous classical answers to that. There are those who say that the purpose of a test, the Rambam says this, the purpose of a test is related to the word nes, as in nisayon, test, and nes means banner, not just miracle. And therefore the Rambam says the purpose of the test is to announce Avraham's righteousness to the world, to reveal his righteousness to the world. The Ramban, which is a position that I would gravitate towards, says the purpose of the test is to actualize potential, to lahotzi, in the Ramban's words, lahotzi mehakoach el hapoal, to take someone's potential and to actualize it. And I think one way of looking at this is that, God forbid if there were a fire to break out in this room, none of us know right now who of us would be the heroes, who of us would be the cowards, who of us would, and not only would the event show us who we are, but it would actualize who we are. So we would be different people after the event occurred. If, please God, I was a hero, I'd be a different person afterwards for having been that hero. So the purpose of the test is to actualize Avram's potential. But there is an approach, it's revolutionary. And I remember when I first saw it, it's the approach of the Rashbam. Now, the Rashbam is Rashi's grandson. And the reason if Parshas Chayei Sarah is my favorite Parsha, he's my favorite classical Mefarish, because he is a Pashtan. He basically sticks to the Pashut Pshat, to the text. He says, this is what I'm doing, this is what I intend to do. He takes his grandfather to task periodically, over the Rashi's use of Medrash. And there's even a quote in the Rashbam, I haven't seen it, I haven't found it yet, but I'm told it's there, that where he says that my grandfather told me that if he were to rewrite his Perush now, he would stick much closer to Pashut Pshat. So it's interesting to hear that dynamic. Now the Rashbam takes a look at the first sentence of the Akedah, which is there on your sheets. Take a look at the first sentence in Hebrew or in English and tell me what you think. There are superfluous words. There are extra words in that sentence which don't need to be there at face value. What phrase would you say might be superfluous? Vayhi achar hadvorim ho'ele. Correct. And it was after these things. Now let's understand, I'm going to ask, does the Torah follow chronological order? All right, I love the answer I get, all right? The answer is the Torah follows chronological order, except when it doesn't. All right, now what I mean by that is as follows. According to some Mefarshim, not all, Ein Mukdam U'Me'uchar Batorah is a rule that they will apply periodically when they cannot understand or they can't interpret or don't want to interpret the events in sequence. It's used sparingly. It's not used all the time. And it's used, again, only by certain mafarshim. The Ramban, for example, Nachmanides will say, I don't agree with that rule. Everything is chronological. And he will struggle to show you how everything is chronological, even when others would disagree. But even those who hold that periodically it's not chronological will say that generally the Torah is chronological. Avram comes before Yitzchak, Yitzchak comes before Yaakov, Sarah comes before Rivka. The story unfolds generally chronologically, unless there are unusual circumstances. So therefore, whenever the Torah says, Vayhi achar hadvorim ho'ele, or Vayhi acharei hadvorim ho'ele, at face value, it's superfluous. Generally, it's chronological. So I'm going to assume that whatever is occurring now occurred after what came before. So why would the Torah say, Vayhi achar hadvorim ho'ele? What would the purpose of that be? What do you think? To connect, correct. To connect that which comes before with that which is about to occur. So therefore, it would stand to reason that Vayhi achar advarim ho'ela, in the case of the Akedah, is telling me that somehow what's about to occur with the Akedah is connected to the event that came directly before it. Take a look at the event directly before the Akedah. It's the second event, it's the second paragraph on your page. Look at it in English or Hebrew. Just take a quick glance. It's page one. Page one, second paragraph on the page. The question is, what connection could there be between the Akedah and what came directly before it, which is what? The bris that Avraham makes with Avimelech. All right, now, I'll take you, Isaac, in a minute. Chazal will struggle with this. And if you turn the page, you'll see that Rashi, basically unwilling or unable to find a direct connection between the two events, waxes Midrashic here, turns to the Midrash. And he says, Vayhi achar advarim ha'ela doesn't mean, or after these things, it means after these diburim, right? What are the diburim? Diburim are things that people said. And he quotes a medrash that says that two individuals, I'll call them individuals, it's Satan and Yishmael, might have said something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that caused the Akedah. Satan comes to Hashem and says, and let's remember, Satan is not an independent being. It's really a reflection of Hashem's will. So that part of Hashem that's looking for justice or looking to test someone, Satan says, Avraham did all sorts of parties when Yitzchak was born, but he didn't give you a karbon. So along comes a Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, now I'll show you what he'd be willing to give me as a karbon. Yishmael turns to Yitzchak, perhaps, says the Midrash, and says, you think you're so great. You had a bris at 8 days old. I had a bris at 12 years. Which is tougher? So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we'll see what Yitzchak's willing to do. So this is not pshat. This is Midrash. But it's Rashi saying, I guess, I don't see a clear connection between the events that are unfolding. I don't know how to connect the Akedah to the bris with Avimelech. And therefore, the interpretation that I'll present for the words Vayhi achar advarim ho'ela is going to be midrashic, because the pashut pshat doesn't seem to flow. Along comes his grandson and Rashbam, and he says, no, I'm not willing to go midrashic here. Pashut pshat, there is an explanation for why the Akedah follows the bris with Avimelech. Isaac, were you going to posit the reason? There you go. Okay, that's the Rashbam. I'll explain. That's exactly what the Rashbam says. So take a look at the paragraph that says a radical but literal approach. The Rashbam, I underlined some sections. First of all, the Rashban says, "Kol makom shenemar achar dvarim ela mechubara parsha shelamalo." He says, "Let's understand. I'm not willing to suspend the rule that whenever it says achar dvarim ela, it is connecting what's about to occur with what occurred. So how do I explain it? Achar hadvarim, I'm just looking at the underlined section. Shekaras Avram bris li Avimelech, lo ulenino ulenechdo." He said, what did Avram do? Avram created a covenant with Avimelech, not just between the two of them, but what? In perpetuity. That is exactly, if you go back to the language, that's the language of the bris. The bris is lo li ulenini ulenechti, says Avimelech. To me and to my child and to my grandchild. So I'm creating a covenant in perpetuity with Avimelech, says Avraham. Says the Rashbam. Skip to the next underlined section. Lochain vo Elokim nisoes Avraham kintaro vitziaro. Hashem puts Avraham through this difficult test, rebukes him and punishes him. Or Tziaro doesn't mean punish, it puts him through a difficult circumstance. Klomar, and now look at this powerful sentence of the Rashbam. Nitga'ito beven shenotativ lichros bris b'neichem. I'm skipping between Ashkenazis and Sfardis. You'll have to say it's a new Olez problem. B'neichem uvein b'neichem. V'yato leich v'ha'aleu li'ola. V'yir emaho ilu krisus bris shelcha. Literally, says the Rashbam, God says to Avraham, you had the temerity to create a covenant with Avimelech in perpetuity. Nitga'eta baben shelcha. Literally, you took pride or took for granted this child that I've given to you. Now I'm going to put you through a paces where you'll have to look at this child and potentially consider the possibility of losing the child, so that you'll not make that mistake again. Now, not everybody is going to like this approach. This is a radical approach. It's a radical. Yes, I'm sorry. Well, the word nitgaeta doesn't mean here he's proud of his son. It means you took your son for granted. You were willing to put him in a dangerous circumstance. Right. Okay. So therefore you're putting your child in danger. Now, I'll take a question in a moment. Let me tell you, why would this be putting a child in danger? So let's discuss for a minute, who is Avimelech? What do we know about Avimelech? Is Avimelech a good guy or a bad guy? He was a good guy because he gave Sarah back right away, but he's a bad guy because he took Sarah, right? So let's understand. The truth is Avimelech is nishtehin nishteher, all right? There are bad guys in the Torah beyond our immediate circle. Amalek, Esav. There are good guys in the Torah, Malki Tzedek, right? And then there's people like Avimelech, who wants to have Hashem talks to Avimelech, says, "Agoy gam tzadik taro, are you going to punish me?" But what Avimelech does, and you can see that he does this because Avram actually rebukes him in the beginning of the conversation. He says to him, "What?" He says to him, "Your slaves, your servants stole my wells." And Avimelech says, "I didn't know about this, not me." No. So what's the answer to that? You're the king. Well, if you don't know about it, that's a problem. And if you do know about it, it's a bigger problem, right? Avraham, according to Chazal, says to Avimelech, when Avimelech says to him, "How could you deceive me and say Sarah was your sister?" Avraham says, when someone comes to your land, do they ask, do you need food or water? Or do they ask, who's that lady? Right, so what emerges about Avimelech? What emerges about Avimelech is he's not a bad man, but he rules over a country that does not show a fundamental morality. In other words, he is allowing things to occur in his country. You don't make a covenant with someone like that in perpetuity. We're going to get to see Yitzchak what Yitzchak does with Avimelech, and we'll see that it's different than Avram. And Chazal will condemn Avram's bris here. Chazal says that Avram makes a mistake with this bris, that eventually we are punished by the Plishtim because of this bris. They don't say the same thing about Yitzchak's agreement with Avimelech a generation later. And it has to do with the fact that this is in perpetuity. And what Hashem seems to be saying to him is, you're not being careful enough with your family. You're looking to preach, you're looking to be part of the world, and now you need to pull back. Yes. Okay. It's in the section that I asked you to read. Basically, what happens is Avimelech and his general, thank you for asking, Avimelech and his general come to Avraham, and they say to him, he's in their land. They said to him, we see you're wealthy, we see you're rich, let's make a covenant, let's make a bris. Let's make a covenant in perpetuity between us and between our children and our grandchildren that we are going to have a covenant of peace between us. And Avram agrees to the bris. Avram says, I'm co-race this covenant with you. And the problem is that Chazal say it's a mistake.
But was this after he took Sarah?
This was after he took Sarah. Well, when he took Sarah, he thought he was taking Avram's sister. It certainly is better than taking Avram's wife. We're not analyzing his, Avimelech's. Sure, there's a degree. Maybe there's a. But he's saying, you know what? Let's make up. Yeah, look, there are people. When we made a peace treaty with Egypt, one could argue it was after they did a lot of things that were worse than Avram's taking. In other words, you make a peace treaty. But what's happening here, according to Chazal, is that Avram's going too far. That to make a covenant with someone like that in perpetuity, and that's what the Rashbam is saying. The Rashbam is saying, and there's a balance here. The question is, Avram has to balance his mission to the world with his protection of his family. And here, according to Chazal, he's making that misstep. And that's where, again, the Rashbam says, that brings us to the Akedah. Now, okay, so very good. That's not the Rashbam, but that's Chazal. Chazal will say, and I should have said this, thank you for saying it, that a fundamental reason that it's a mistake, it's not just that you don't make a bris with a person like Avimelech, but when you make a bris with Avimelech, who is a resident of this land, who you're supposed to eventually conquer, you are contradicting God's bris as well. So that's part of why the Plishtim, according to Chazal, become a thorn in our side for many generations. Thank you. Okay, all right. So again, the answer to that, I think, would be that if you look at the story of Avraham, Ein Somchin al Hanes, and with Yah, and right. In other words, I'm allowed to do what I need to do to save myself. I'm allowed to do to protect myself. So I don't think that in and of itself is the chet. The chet is, who are you doing it with, and whether it contradicts what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to do. Now, this concept that Avraham might be balancing his own legacy and his own family with, and it's a much greater, the truth is it's a much greater study, because preceding this with Avimelech, you see him, there's a dance that takes place where Avram goes outward and then inward and then outward and then inward, but we're doing Parsha, so I can't go into that now. Let's go to the next thing. Is there any other indication in Chazal that Avram might be spending a little bit too much time outside and not watching what's happening inside? Take a look at the bottom of the page. Take a look at Vatera Saras ben Hagar HaMitzrit Asher Yolda Li Avraham Mitzachek. Right? This takes place later on in Chaye Sarah. And what happens? I'm sorry, in Vayera. Vatomer Li Avraham Garesh Ha'am HaZos Ve'espana Ki Lo Yirash Ha'am HaZot Im B'ni Mitzchak. So what's the situation here? Sarah sees Yishmael mitzachek. And the rabbis will say mitzachek means either idolatry or licentiousness, something that's bad. And she says to Avram, you have to kick them out. And a very difficult event. And then the Torah says, Vayera hadavar mi'od, b'eine Avraham al odot bino. And Avram saw this was terrible concerning his son. What's not clear? Which son, right? So obviously I think the Torah is leaving it vague because he's upset about both sons. Good. But Chazal say something that we would never have the temerity to say. Alo dot beno sheyatza sheshama sheyatza letarbut ra'ah. Because what is he upset about? He just heard from Sarah that Yishmael has become immoral, has gone into a tarbut ra'ah. What would you answer to that? Where have you been for the last 12 years? Right? And it's Sarah who is the one who has to protect the family, and HaKadosh Baruch who says to him, Kol Asher Tomar Lecha Sarah, what? Shema Bekola. So again, you have this possibility that, we don't know each other very well yet. We're just starting to study together. There will be those who are sitting here and saying to themselves, how can you say these things about Avraham, right? How can you say these things about Yitzchak? It's not me. Let's understand that. I've got sources here. But let's understand the truth is that Chazal are divided, and we'll encounter the other end of the extreme too. Chazal are divided as to how to view the heroes of the Torah. There will be those who will say that the heroes of the Torah are superhuman. They won't use those words, but totally without hate, totally without sin, cannot err, cannot stumble, and whatever you see in the text that seems to be a stumble or seems to be a problem, you're not understanding it. All right, the example of this at that extreme would be Yaakov saying to Yitzchak, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, right? Yaakov turning to his father and saying, I am Esav the firstborn. And Rashi quoting Chazal saying, you got to punctuate that phrase, Anochi, I am, period. I am who I am, and Esav is your firstborn. Because it's not possible that Yaakov would tell a lie to his father. So that is one extreme of how to view the Avot and the Imahot. At the other end of the spectrum are those who are willing to say, no, these are human beings. These are people who you see their struggle, you see them succeed, you see them not succeed, you see the Ramban, who will say, you know, that when in Parshas Lech Lecha, Avram goes down to Egypt because of a famine, he's sinning. Because he should sit and say and have bitachon in Hashem. And when he says, Sarah's my sister, it's a chait. And he uses those words. So these are mefarshim who are saying, no, our heroes are human beings. Now, each one of us can gravitate to different places on that spectrum and be within the context of Chazal. Very often I say, not always, that it's, to me, seeing our heroes as human beings makes them not just more real, but you can learn more from them. Because, you know, if you look at you have the Greek mythology that had its heroes as gods. You have Judaism coming along and saying our heroes are human beings, and then you have Christianity coming back and saying our heroes are gods. If your hero is a god, you can worship that hero, but you can't emulate them. If your heroes are human beings, then you can. So, you can. If some of you are still uncomfortable with this approach, I understand it, but we will encounter this and other approaches as we go. Now, let's assume for a moment that the Rashbam is right. And that the Akedah is this event that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates at least partially to sensitize Avraham to the importance and the significance of his own family in the face of his mission to the world. Take a look at Parshas Chayei Sarah now. Now we get to the Parsha. When the curtain opens on Parshas Chayei Sarah, you find a changed Avraham. Avraham is not the same person. Why do I say that? Because there are two events that occur in Parshas Chayei Sarah, two major events. What are they? They are the burial of Sarah and a finding of a wife for Yitzchak. You don't see in Parshas Chayei Sarah Avram preaching to the world. You see Avram turning inward and dealing with his own family, dealing with the past, and dealing with the future. And this is stark, because the last pasuk before the Akedah was, and I'm showing you hints that Rashbam's approach may actually fit into the flow of the text. Vayita, what was the pasuk that comes right before the Akedah? Vayita Eshel Bever Sheva V'yikra. He's preaching to the world. And then here comes Avram, and what's he doing? He's burying Sarah. He's finding a wife for Yitzchak. He's getting his affairs in order. Now, I don't believe this is a negation of his mission to the world. I think it's a reorientation. I think it's a recognition. And I think, and this is why I think it's so important to see things this way, it's part of the struggle that we engage in our lives. Right? Community leaders, people who are involved in the community, we should have the schus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless us, that we should come to the recognition that Avram comes to, that yes, all that's very important, but not at the cost of our own families, not at the cost of our own children. We'll get there. Moshe, but that's correct. One of the things we find when it comes, and this is a very frightening thing, is that Moshe Rabbeinu's, you know, it's stark. The Torah says, Ela toldos Aaron Moshe, and then just gives you, in Bamidbar, just gives you the generations of Aaron. It doesn't tell you about Moshe's children. Moshe's children disappear. And they're not mentioned. And what happened to them? And there's even a rabbinic statement that in the book of Shoftim, there's an individual who's an idolater who is Ben Menashe. And the Nun in Menashe is small because it's telling us that it was a descendant of Moshe. So, again, there's this need to learn from the Torah that, you know, that somehow we can't lose sight of our own as well. Now, what happens here? So we see two events. And I want to show you how these two events not just are a return to the family, but they are much more. Now, the first one we've already dealt with. Let's just review. Avram turns, and those who were here last week will know that we dealt with this, but for those who weren't, let's review quickly. Avram is negotiating with Bnei Ches. It's on page 3. Avram is negotiating with Bnei Ches for a plot of land to bury Sarah. And the question we raised last week was a technical question. Why is it that the Torah dedicates more text to this event than it does to the Akedah? What is it about this event that is so important that an event that you or I could have written in 2 or 3 sentences, the Torah is dedicating over 20 sentences to? And there's a whole series of answers, which we reviewed. It's important because it shows us that we purchased a plot in Eretz Yisrael. Of course, it's ironic that it's Hebron, it's Maras HaMachpelah, which continues to be a source of friction. It is to tell us the importance of treating the dead. This Parshas Chayei Sarah traditionally becomes, in our world, the parsha where we celebrate the Chevra Kadisha, the importance of dealing with the dead and how to deal with the dead. It shows Avraham's faith. It shows Avraham's faith because it shows that Avraham is what? Is willing to believe that Hashem will give him the land, even though he has to purchase a plot of land at the end of his life to bury his wife, and it's not his yet. But it is the two sentences that I first underline that I think, to my mind, really tell us the power of this section. And it's again, it's a review. Ger v'toshav anochi imachem, tenu liachuzas keber imachem ve'ekporam esim ilfonai. Avram turns to Bnei Ches, and this is a pasuk of self-definition. And it's a pasuk of self-definition. He says, I am a stranger and a citizen together with you. We noted that that's a dialectical phrase because it's made of two opposites, right? Ger, lagur, stranger, toshav, citizen. And we said, what is a ger v'toshav? And the rabbis, some of the rabbis will say, you can't have both. So he's saying, I was a ger, I was a stranger, and now I'm a citizen. But we suggested, and Rav Soloveitchik says this, that ger v'toshav is his own self-definition. I am a stranger and a citizen together with you. And there could be no more accurate sociological description of the Jew in society across the face of history than those two words. Right? And Avram is saying, I want you to know, this is who I am. I am that. And he's talking to all of, and let's remember, as we said, this is happening in public. It's not just a private negotiation with one person. The Torah goes out of its way to say again and again, Le'enei b'nei ches, lifnei b'nei ches, v'yishtachu Avram lifnei b'nei ches, because it's happening, and he's saying, listen, I will be a citizen with you. I will rise to the top if you let me, but I'm a ger. So I need my burial plot. And it's two sentences later where the battle is joined. Vayishma'enu Adoni, say the B'nei Ches, Nisi Elokim Ata B'tochenu, B'mivchar Kivarenu Kvar Et Meitecha. And at face value, it seems like the Hittites are being wonderful people, because what are they saying? What are you hacking me a Chinese? What do you have to be a Ger V'tosha for? You're a prince of God with us. Pick a grave. You've got it in our graves. In our, what, you need a private cemetery? You need a separate grave? You need to be different? Not necessary. And as I said last week, this is where the battle is joined, right? Which, had it gone differently, you and I wouldn't be sitting here today. We wouldn't be here. If Avram, this is the point where if Avram says to those Hittites at that particular moment, shine fine, good, thank you very much, I'll bury her in one of your graves, I'm a Nasi Elokim, b'sochachem, wonderful. But Avram here now, and the Rash, I, building on the Rashbam, sensitized and traumatized by the Akedah perhaps, recognizing that maybe in the past he's gone too far, is pulling back, and he's saying, this is who I am. And this brings Avraham's mission full circle. Because when Hashem said to him, Lech lecho me'artzecho, Chazal say it was a dialectic. It was on the one hand, separate yourself from the world, and the other hand, travel around and teach people. Be apart from and a part of the world. And now Avraham is saying, at the end of his life, that's who I am. I don't need God to tell that to me anymore. I'm standing here and I'm self-defining. And it goes back and forth and back and forth. And that I believe is why the Torah is telling us this. Because it's not just, this is not just the purchase of a burial plot for sorrow. This is Avram at the end of his life staking out his ground. And then, in a sense, telling us, you know what? That's going to be your job across the face of history to find the balance between those two extremes. And how you define the balance in your life of Ger V'toshav determines where you stand on the Jewish spectrum. Right? The Haredim will say, this is where we put Ger V'toshav, this is where we are on the spectrum. Modern Orthodox Jews will say, this is where we are on the spectrum. And by the way, now that we are back into the thank God, the world of nation building, as a nation, we're doing the same thing. We're saying we want to be part of the community of nations, but we don't want to relinquish the high ground. We may have to defend ourselves, but we want a moral army. We want to be different and yet the same. Where do you draw that line? And when we slip, look at American Jewry today. I don't know about British Jewry or others, but I'll talk about American Jewry. Look at how we're slipping. Yeah, there's a nice, strong Orthodox community, but outside its boundaries, it's disappearing. It's not the struggle to be Ger V'toshav it's been surrendered. It's been surrendered. We're assimilating into American society. So that's what this is all about. And it ends. Yes. Right. That's good. That's very good. Right. And I want it to be my achuzat kever. And by the way, you know, some people will look at this and say, he starts off saying, give me, and then he says, I'll buy. I think it's possible that he changes, that when he realized the pushback, you know, that he says, okay, it'll be good enough if you give it to me in the beginning. Although there are those who say tenuli means I'll purchase. But you could say that he's saying in the beginning, if you give me it, I'll use it, fine. And then when he sees the pushback and the attempt to assimilate him, that he then says, no, I've got to buy it. You know, he realizes the extent, yes. Ahuza means an inheritance, something I can hold on to. Echoes, to hold on. Right. Yeah, agreed. But the question is he willing to get it as a gift or does he have to buy it? And that may change in the process because he may see that getting it as a gift wouldn't be good enough. When they say to him, bury her in one of our plots, he then says, no, show me Ephron, I want to buy it. Now, what's fascinating is let's take this now to the second event in Parshas Chayesora. Second event in Parshas Chayesora begins with the paragraph that you have in the bottom of page 4, right? And that is the first shidduch, right? That we're trying to, well, not really. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating Chava was the first shidduch. But this is Avraham searching for a wife for Yitzchak. And he does something which we've learned since third, fourth grade, many of us. He turns to his servant, Eliezer, who, by the way, is not named in this event. That's a whole another thing to talk about. He turns to Eliezer and he says, Vashbiacho, I'm looking at sentence 3. Vashem Elokei Hashamayim Elokei Oretz, I want you to swear by the God of heaven and the God of earth. Asher lo tikach yishor livni mimnos haknani, I don't want you to take a wife for Yitzchak from the Canaanite women around me. Ki el artzi, I want you to go back to my homeland. I want you to go back to Aram Naharayim. And I want you to find a gift, a wife for Yitzchak from there. What's the problem? What's the problem with that suggestion? It's counterintuitive. Excellent. Right. This whole thing is counterintuitive. I remember when I was in fourth grade and I first learned this, I said, well, Avram doesn't want Yitzchak to intermarry. But guess what? There ain't no Jews in Canaan and there ain't no Jews in Aram Naharaim. It's not a question of intermarriage, right? In fact, there ain't no Jews at all. Avram's not a Jew. Avram is the precursor of the Jewish nation. So it's counterintuitive. God appeared to him and said, you're living now in Aram Naharayim, lech lecha, get out of here, because you can't do your mission unless you go to where I'm telling you. And now at the end of his life, what is Avram doing? He's saying to Eliezer, I want you to go back to the place where Hashem told me to leave, and that's where I want you to find a wife for Yitzchak. So what's the answer? Okay, good. I'm going to take it a step further, but hold on to that. I'm going to come back to that. But what are the traditional answers? Does anybody know? The Chazal asked this question. This isn't just my question. Why is Avram sending Eliezer back? What? From his own family. Okay, so one answer is from his family. By the way, though, the problem with that is if you look at the text, Avram never says that. Eliezer says it. Eliezer, and this is something else that's beautiful in Parshas Chayesora, Eliezer changes Avram's words because he's a tremendous diplomat. When he sees that he's with Avram's family, he changes Avram's words and he says, Avram wanted me to go back to his family. Avram never says that. He says, El moladeti vel artzi tele, go back to my land. Now, whether or not he meant, and Eliezer understood that's what he meant, or whether or not Eliezer is just saying, wow, this is fortuitous, but I've got to make the family, and he changes other words too, to make the family feel that Avram hasn't divorced himself from the family, that he really is connected, because he's trying to make sure they'll do what he's asking. All right, so that's one answer. Are there any other possible answers? Another answer. Okay, but then why does Hashem, that is an answer, but the problem with that answer is why does Hashem say he has to leave to go to Canaan? So the Chazal who give that one as an answer, you know what they say? It's fascinating. They say that in Aram Naharayim, where they are somewhat more moral, Avraham's danger of assimilation is greater than in Canaan, where they are so immoral that that the difference between him and them is clearer. Right? That's the American problem, right? In other words, when we talk about assimilation, if they're not that horrible out there. So if they're not that horrible, why not be like them? As opposed to now, which means, by the way, and it's important when we read the Torah to see this, is that the Torah is very gives us different views of different civilizations. You've got Aram Naharaim, which maybe is a little more moral, right? You've got Avimelech's group, which is, as we said, somewhat in there. You've got Sodom, which is, terrible, and you can't even live there. And we saw what happens to Lot when he lives there. And you've got Canaan, which is somewhere in between Sodom and Avimelech, let's say, right? So they're horrible, but they're not as horrible as Sodom, where you can't live at all. You can live there, but the difference is clear. However, so these are some classical answers to the question of why go back to Aram Naharaim. But I'm picking up on what you suggested. I'm going to take it a little bit differently. Is it possible that Avraham is now looking to perpetuate his own realization to the next generation, right? Which is, I am a ger v'toshav. I am a stranger and a citizen. I have a balance that I have to keep. And as he looks at the next generation, he sees a problem. Because what's the difference between him and Yitzchak? Yitzchak was born in Canaan, right? Yitzchak is a toshav. Yitzchak is a citizen. Yitzchak was born in Canaan. Avram may not know this, but maybe he does because he's a Navi. We don't know. Yitzchak will never leave Canaan, right? He will be the only one of the patriarchs never to leave. So is it possible that Avram looks at Yitzchak and says, you know what? A reason, or one of the primary reasons that I have been able to achieve this balance is because I came from somewhere else and traveled here. I made a journey. And therefore, if I'm going to perpetuate this balance into the next generation, what do I have to do? I have to make sure there is someone in that generation who makes the same journey that I made. I have to bring someone into Yitzchak's life who will be coming from outside this society, who will therefore be able to look at this society. Yitzchak's going to be friends with what, I don't know what Canaanite first names were, but with Yankel Canaanite down the block. He's not going to be able to see this. So I have to bring someone in who will. And therefore, what do? I send Eliezer back to Aram Naharaim to hopefully find the right person who will then make this journey and will be able to see with clear eyes what needs to be seen. And by the way, in this next generation, who has the clearer vision? Yitzchak or Rivka, right? And that whole event where Yitzchak and Rivka perceive differently Yaakov and Esav, and Rivka is introduced in Parshas Toldos with saying that Yitzchak married Rivka, the daughter of Besuel, the Aramite, the sister of Lava. I know all that, right? But why is it introducing it that way? Because it's saying, hey, you know what? She's seen these things. She grew up in a world where you saw Lavan, where you saw Besuel, where you saw these people. So she can look at her children and say, which of these children is going to carry on the legacy? Because she has that vision. She can arrive at that balance of Ger V'Toshav. So it's possible. It's possible that we can see Chaye Sarasara, therefore, as a cohesive whole, where Avraham is doing a number of things. He is backing up, turning inward, dealing with his family. Is it because, as the Rashbam might indicate, that it's a result of the trauma of the Akedah and the lesson? Perhaps. He is not only turning inward and dealing with his family, but he's doing much more. He's defining for himself and for coming generations exactly where we need to be as we find ourselves within society. So that's why Parshas Chayesor is my favorite parsha. Because if you look at it, it is not only a cohesive whole, but the lessons that emerge potentially beneath the surface are as relevant as the struggles that we deal with every single day. And how we raise our children, and how what we allow into the house and what we don't allow into the house. So back up for a minute, and if we look at last week and we look at this week, there's been a theme that has coursed through our studies, and that has been, how do we deal with an outside society? Right? We had Lot, who moved to a place where you can't live, right? And there are going to be places like that in the world where you can't live because it will change you so substantially that you will not be able to be what you need to be. We see Avraham potentially struggling with this throughout his life, misstepping perhaps here and there, and yet at the same time continuing on the journey until he arrives at this point where he can say, I now know who I am. And then he perpetuates it for the next generation. That you have to be excellent, very pretty. It's a pretty vision. Very nice. Thank you. And understand that this struggle will play itself out throughout Sefer Bereshit. You'll see it in Yaakov in the house of Lavan, where he'll come back and say, "I'm Lavan Garti," right? I wasn't a Toshav. You'll see it. As we said last week, when Yosef, the cosmopolitan Jew, will orchestrate a severance or a gap between his brothers, his family, and the Egyptians as they come down and orchestrates the first ghetto. And you'll see it when Bnei Israel lose their footing. And instead of saying separate, at the end of Parshas Vayigash, it says, Vayeachazu, they become part of Egyptian society. To the point that in Shemot, you see Vatimaleha Aretz Osam, and the rabbis say they were no longer just in Goshen, they become part of the society, and that leads to part of the problem. So here's some things to think about. It continues to talk about our own struggles today, and Bezrat Hashem, we'll move on from there next week. Thank you.